most of the stuff that he's doing, I did first, but apart from that.
Oh my gosh. Well, he is the grandfather, you know, in this space. It being around for 5 years instead of, you know, three.
I joke, actually, that I blogged in 2007 about an innovation hub, and he left a comment on the blog post. It's still there. And I joke about...
We built the innovation hub in Nairobi this year. So it's this, you know, this space about the size of this room. So it's a pretty big space with a lot of, like, local... We have over 2,000 members from the tech community in Nairobi. It's a pretty interesting place. But yeah, he thinks it was his idea and it was stolen.
But in all seriousness, I think though that it actually shows that ideas actually are nothing. And I think this applies in ICT for D as well.
Ideas that matter.
Everybody has an idea, and many people have many ideas. But if you don't actually do anything with them, then they're useless. So for me, I mean, maybe our SMS hub isn't the best frontline SMS type system available. But I got out there and did it, and I built it, and I've been spending 5 years working on it. So it's about execution.
Said for iterative development too, like just getting something out there. You know, the first iterations of Ushahidi were not good, but they worked. It was rudimentary, but it worked, right? Same thing, you could say the same thing for frontline SMS. The first time the tool was built, it wasn't that great. It took years of further development, further versions that made it better. So we need to, you know, and I don't know, one of the things that was brought up, but we couldn't get into any depth in the conversations in there was, you know, this concept by Tim about the saying researchers are just reporting on things, they're not doing things. Well, should researchers be doing the things? Are researchers ever going to ship software? You know, that's one thing you have to answer. If you're going to sit there and say that you've got to be more than just a researcher, I don't know. I doubt. Well, I just have my reservations on the average researcher, academic trying to write a paper about them being able to get software created and shipped.
Yeah, but I mean, those are different functions, right? I mean, you have the academics, and you have the practitioners, you have the IT guys who invent something just for the sake of inventing it sometimes.
Right.
So I think it's probably the point was, is getting all these communities more closer together, right?
Well, yeah, then I mean, if that's what he was saying, then that was good. I just didn't, I was trying to figure out what he was saying, actually, because I didn't, you know, I think there's a different mindset that comes from being, you know, I don't even know what a practitioner is. I just, you know, I guess it's people who do things, you know, who build things in this case, versus people who talk about and research them, right? And, I don't know if the two can be paired up very easily. I think it takes a very unique individual to be both.
Well, I think the point I made at the very beginning was quite important, that actually we've done research. It's a different kind of research. But before anybody builds a tool and goes out and does anything, you have to have some sense that what you're doing is useful. And there has to be some basis to what you do. You know, Frontline SMS came out of a realization that there was no tool in the field that actually did what I could see grassroots NGOs wanted to do. When Ushahidi came out, you know, you saw that there was no, all this news wasn't being reported, there wasn't a place people could go and submit this information, so you built it. So that's the research bit.
I mean, I don't know if defining that as research is correct. I mean, it's like we had an itch and we scratched it. You had an itch and you scratched it. That was really what we were defining. I mean, Twitter was built off of scratching an itch. Facebook, the same thing. You know, it's not like these were tools. ICT, you know, tech tools aren't built. The successful ones are usually built because people are trying to scratch an itch, not because somebody really studied something and then built it. Right. There are always outliers. I think like Groupon is a great example of somebody from a business perspective late taking a look at something and saying, okay, we can attack this. The tool is actually marginal. It's a very small percentage of the pie here. Mm. And it's actually business and making money, and this is how we're going to do it. And then they make a lot of money. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there's times when you do that, but I think by and large, when I look at the tools in this space especially, people were scratching an itch. Mm-hmm. And market research was kind of as you were building it.
Well, that's the problem. I think that a lot of the tools that maybe aren't working are the ones that people have just come up with in their bedrooms and not really tried to get any sense of understanding of. I mean, for me, I agree, the research that we do, it's a very loose use of the word research, because we didn't sit down and go on the web and start to actually go out and do primary interviews. We just sort of sat down. But for us, you know, I've been doing work in Africa for 10 years up to the point when I started doing the work that led to Frontline SMS. So I had a very good understanding. I'd kind of done my time, so to speak. I'd done my research. My research was spending time with rural communities, with grassroots NGOs, understanding the context and the reality. And then the tool came out. It was very much done that way around. You know, for you lived in Africa, you had a very strong understanding and appreciation of the tech space. space. And that was your research. You know, it wasn't done as part of the Ushahidi project, or for me, it wasn't done as part of Frontline SMS. It was the time that you do before that point, learning and understanding and immersing yourself in the environments that you want to work, because that's where most people miss out. Right? The kid in the bedroom who decides, I'm going to build a data collection tool on the iPad because I think farmers might find it useful in Africa, they miss out on that context because they haven't been out in the field. And that's one bit of advice I always give when I meet young people at conferences and speak at CGI University or go to, you know, university classes. While you're young and while you can, get out into the field and get yourself into the thick of it, you know, get your hands dirty, try to understand what HIV AIDS as an epidemic actually means to communities. Go and speak to community healthcare workers, follow them around for a few weeks, you know, understand it that way. You completely forget about the technology. And so, that's not what happens usually.
So I think it's interesting when you have, I believe that technology works off of the Pareto principle, right? Where you have, you want to actually have a lot, you want more things at the top end of the funnel, even if they're bad ideas. Right? Because the more that's out there, there's still only a few that will work and do 80% of that, 80% of the work that's happening, right? But you need more at the top end of the funnel to have new ideas stirred up, to get people thinking in different ways. Because even us at Ushahidi, even Ken at Frontline SMS, when we look at the space that we happen to be in, there's things that we're not iterating on. We're not innovating on ourselves. We need people from the outside to come up with other ideas, and us take a look at those and say, oh yeah, we didn't think of it that way. So it's I actually don't mind when guys who have no experience try something, because I can at least learn something from that tool. Do I think it's a waste of resources sometimes? Sure. You know, maybe waste is too strong of a word though. You know, maybe it's good that they tried and good that they failed. And because if we at least study them, or if we at least check out their features, then we know that it's, you know, that there's something that we can improve on too. So I don't know. I look at this space, and I think this is something interesting that came up in the panel too. Is that, you know, by and large, you know, people, you have to be in this. At this conference, you almost have to be like qualified as a practitioner, or a researcher, right? You know, somehow you were qualified by your university or this or that, right? There's something that you were doing or that your organization. And I think you need more people in who don't have qualifications. You need people to be, to try new things and do new things and allow that kind of crazy idea to proliferate and maybe change the world. That's where it comes from. It doesn't come from the people that are the same old, same old.
So you would suggest that the next conference is more open, that more people could just come by and not so closed?
Well, I don't know. You know, so here I think they did open it up to like, 100, 100 people were sponsored to come in. And so I think that was good. That's a start, right? And I think that needs to continue. You need to have the people with that are outliers coming in and being made aware of this. Sometimes they come from different industries, though, is the thing. I know they had a couple people come in from Map Kibera, from Kibera, in Kenya, the slum in Kenya, which is great. If those 100 people that were sponsored were all like that from all over Asia, South America, and in Africa, I think it'd be a much more diverse and much better conference because of it.
All right, so there's still not enough people from the actual...
Well, I don't know what the breakdown is of the sponsored people. If there's 100 sponsored people, if 25 of them are, you know, from the developing world, or if 80 of them are, I have no idea. But I'm saying is that I think the more diversity and the more... Not diversity in just location where you come from, but in practice, what you study, what you do, is a good thing. We need to get those outliers in here.
Yeah. Do you want to say something?
I think one of the things I like about what Tim does, I've known Tim for about 3 or 4 years now, and we met him at Doha at ICTD 2009, was it?
Last year.
I mean, and I've spoken at the ICT4D Collective here a couple of times, and Tim is very much focused on not having the academics, so to speak, and the practitioners, so to speak, in separate camps. He wants to have a cross-disciplinary... Sorry, now you completely ruined the interview now.
I'm just reading your tweets about me in process.
That was just being
honest. That I've tried and failed to disagree with you during a post-panel interview.
Absolutely. You completely failed to disagree with me.
Who are you on Twitter? I think I probably follow you. You're a white African. Yeah, yeah, then I follow you. You're and what else?
I'm Kiwanja.
You're Kiwanja. I'm following you too.
Good, wonderful.
All right, yeah. I'll unfollow you after the interview.
Oh, yeah, I know. Now, I think what Tim has done is, I think Tim's done really well to try and bridge that gap, that sort of multidisciplinary thing. So, you know, whenever I've been here and spoken, the class has been full of not just kids doing PhDs and just out-and-out research, but people who are actually spending a lot of time in the field trying to understand the realities, very, very hands-on. And I like that. And I think Tim has made a very, 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 very bold effort in this conference to try and bridge that. I think it'll take a while, because I think ICT4D as a whole has traditionally been an academics conference. I think for the last, this is the third one now, Bangalore 2007, then Doha, and now London. And I think traditionally it was set up as a place where academics would come and read their papers and tick a box and be able to move on. And I think Tim is trying to move it away from that. And I think he's done a great job this year. And I think it will be the start of something. As he said during the panel discussion, he wants to get some things out of this. And he made a point of trying to bring the people together who generally agreed with what I said, which I think was most people, to be fair, to try and actually figure out, you know, how we can take that stuff forward.
You think, from your own experience with iPhones and Twitter, do you think it's good to give that to the world? I mean, is technology always a good thing?
Well, it's not something that you can codify as good or bad. I think that's the problem. It's like, you know, is a hammer good or bad? Depends what you're using it for, right? When I use one on Ken, it's a bad thing. When I use one on my house, it's a good thing, right? So technology is that way. It can be used for good or bad for anything. No, it's, you know, the social stuff. It doesn't matter if you like it or not. It's reality. This is where things are going. And so even if you go to, you know, a village near Nairobi, you know, an hour outside Nairobi, you will find guys on their phones checking Facebook. You know, that's just something, a new reality that we have to deal with and live with. So is it good or bad? It's irrelevant.
Yeah, I actually agree with that, surprisingly. I think that the technology will be there and it will get there. And I think all we can do is that we can be focused on ensuring that among all the obvious applications that are going to start spinning out, the kind of the porn applications, the betting, the sports, all that stuff, among all of that we bring in some kind of element of social, environmental angle, that we build apps that can make more socially beneficial use of the technology. You know, iPhones will make it eventually, or smartphones will eventually make it into rural communities in African countries. There's no doubt about that. It might take a few years, and I think it will take a few years. But once it gets there, we just need to make sure that what's available and how they're deployed and used is not just as a money-making commercial exercise by operators and handset manufacturers, but there's also things they can do to improve their lives and be better educated and do all the things that we believe mobile is useful for.
Yeah, I think people in this space need to be more aware of guys like what Steve Vosloo is doing. In South Africa, they have a really big 20 million plus users social mobile network called Mixit. Okay, so just an app that sits on your phone, but 20 million, you know, youth in South Africa use this. And what Steve did is he said, well, he got together with the Mixit guys and said, hey, can we build some educational elements into this? So books that are published through Mixit, so people can read the book on their mobile phone. Ways that that community of youth can actually write their own books and disseminate them that way. That's the way you should be looking at technology. Not as the tool being the end-all be-all in itself, but the uses of that tool by the local community and being driven by that local community quite a bit. I think that's where it gets exciting.